It's Monday, the 9th of November, and this is VOA's International Edition. My name is Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming your way, we will have the latest from the election in Myanmar. Votes are continuing. Also, there are questions about the safety of airports, especially in Egypt, where a Russian plane apparently was brought down, perhaps by a bomb. And you will also hear a review of the new James Bond movie. It's called Spectre. All that and more. It's all ahead. Well, there is voting going on. It is still being counted in Myanmar. And we will have the latest for you on that program, on that election as soon as it can. In fact, here is the latest right now. Myanmar democracy icon Aung San Suu Kyi says her party is the apparent winner of Sunday's historic parliamentary elections. Speaking Monday at the headquarters of her National League for Democracy in Yangon, the Nobel Peace Laureate told a jubilant crowd of supporters that although it was too early to congratulate the party's winning candidates, the people have a good idea what the final results will be. NLD spokesman Win Hatane told reporters the party has won more than 70% of the votes. The first official results were to have been announced at 9 a.m. local time. However, the country's election officials postponed that announcement until 6 p.m. their time. That's 11:30 universal time, without giving a reason for the delay. Now, the NLD is expected to easily defeat the ruling Union Solidarity Development Party, made up of members of Myanmar's former military dictatorship. One of those USDP lawmakers, Parliamentary Speaker Shwe Man, has already conceded defeat to his NLD opponent in his bid for a seat in Pew Township. Man was considered a candidate for Myanmar's president, which will be selected by parliament. It is an involved political process. The NLD must win more than two-thirds of the contested seats to form a government and choose a president. If it falls short, it will have to form an alliance with a number of smaller political parties. Now, by contrast, the military-backed ruling Union Solidarity and Development Party needs to win only a third of the contested seats to maintain power, because the military automatically maintains a block of 25% of all of the parliamentary seats. Aung San Suu Kyi cannot become president herself because her late husband and two sons are British, and Myanmar's constitution bars anyone with a foreign-born spouse or children from becoming president. However, you might remember that she said on Thursday that if her party wins election, she will take up a government role above the president. She didn't explain her remarks. Some people thought at first that she might have been joking, but apparently not. About 32 million people in Myanmar were registered to vote in Sunday's elections for members of both houses of the national parliament and regional assemblies. Election officials say the turnout was 80%. The voting rolls did not include hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims who were barred from the polls after years of being marginalized by the government. Samantha Power, who is the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, called the disenfranchisement of the Rohingya as many significant flaws and challenges that must be addressed going forward in a statement that she issued on Sunday. The NLD won a landslide victory in the 1990 elections. However, those results were ignored by the ruling military junta. However, Myanmar's army chief Ming Aung Hlaing told reporters Sunday in the capital of Naypyidaw that the military will accept the will of the people at this time. Well, Owen Ashuluku, and I'm trying to get you to. You have been here for a long time, all right? I have always had trouble with your last name, and please accept publicly my apologies.
It's all right. Happens every week when I come on to do this.
All right. So what you've been following social media for the past hour or two or so? How big of a presence? How big has this Myanmar election stood out?
Well, there is a fair amount of social media dialogue around Myanmar's elections today. People who want to comment are tagging their tweets with hashtag Myanmar elections or hashtag Burma votes 2015. Aung San Suu Kyi's name is actually trending on Twitter in the United States. Our Southeast Asia Bureau Chief Steve Herman, who's on the ground in Myanmar, he's been very active on social media, and he's been tweeting out results as fast as they're being released. He actually tweeted out that a lot of people in the area are experiencing internet outages, so that could contribute to how the social media conversation continues to develop, rather. But across social media so far, a lot of people are saying they're very happy to hear that the elections have been peaceful and that it appears Myanmar voters are getting a say in their government.
Well, it kind of remains to be seen how the government reacts to all of this. And that, of course, is one of the major and big questions. Aung San Suu Kyi, as we just told you, coming out and saying that she will have a position above the president. That could come back to bite her. Of course, we don't know. All right, let's check some other stories that are hot on social media.
Right. Well, people are also talking about this appearance that presidential candidate Donald Trump made on Saturday Night Live this weekend.
Yeah.
A lot of people are still talking about it. Right now, Larry David, he's a famous comedian, he's actually trending on Facebook because during the episode, he made a guest appearance and he heckled Trump during his monologue, calling him a racist. He was actually making a reference to a protest group that had reportedly offered $5,000 for someone to sneak in and heckle the performance. But a lot of Trump supporters also tweeted out how much they enjoy the show. So the conversation is kind of going both ways on social media. It's really interesting because people that like Trump and people that don't like Trump, they'll always tune in to watch him. And people just love to talk about the guy.
It's going to be very interesting. I think the ratings for the program come out, which, of course, here in the United States is at most. That's all bottom line.
Yeah.
And it's expected to be very, very high. Did you see the program?
I did see it, and I have to say I was a little disappointed.
Little disappointed? Trump, who touts himself as an entertainer,
right,
was awful. he wasn't funny. That's the thing.
I have to say,
though,
the one thing I did like was watching him dance to Drake's new song. I forget what it's called, but that's always funny watching presidential candidates try to dance.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. As far I heard this morning that if you were to compile all the time that Donald Trump spent on the air on this program on Saturday Night Live, that it added up to about 12 minutes. Now, one of the reasons for that is that under election laws of the United States, that networks have to give equal time to all other candidates.
Really?
Yeah. However, that applies to the entire network. So therefore, a 12-minute appearance by, let's say, Christie or one of the other many, many Republican candidates would satisfy that. So maybe that's one of the reasons why they really limited the time that he was on. But nevertheless, anything else you got trending?
Recently, there's a story that just started trending. Catalonia, which is a province in northern Spain, is apparently their parliament has voted to declare independence by 2017. And that's story, we're going to have to continue to see how that develops.
That has been a political issue in Spain for centuries.
Yeah.
Centuries, right. Now. Catalonians wanting to, to set themselves apart. It has always failed in the past, but the international political picture has changed so much over the past decade or so, we have no idea what's going to happen. Other things that are happening is Britain going to withdraw from the European Union. That's strong as well. We already saw a referendum of Scotland withdrawing from the UK.
That's right.
And that failed. So this is all things that are trending, all things that people are interested in. Olin, thank you so much for being with us, spending some time, and we'll talk to you again.
You bet, Ira.
All right. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Winter, when days are short, will soon be upon those of us in the Northern Hemisphere. It's the short days that can play havoc with people's moods and well-being. Over 14 million Americans suffer from a form of depression known as seasonal affective disorder, or SAD. While experts aren't really sure what causes SAD, some think it may be caused by a lack of sunlight in the winter. To treat SAD, some doctors and mental health experts have prescribed light therapy, where patients are exposed to very bright artificial light for 30 minutes or more each day. But a new study has found that cognitive behavioral therapy was much better at preventing SAD patients from relapsing in future winters than light therapy. The study shows that this special form of talk therapy teaches SAD patients to challenge their negative thoughts about dark winter months and resist behaviors like social isolation that can affect a person's mood. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in Washington, and we have been able to establish communications with VOA Steve Herman, who is in Yangon in Myanmar. And Steve, we have basically given an overview of what has happened so far, but apparently some of the do you have any newer returns as they come in? Is it still looking good for Aung San Suu Kyi's party?
Yes, it is looking very good for the NLD and its party leader Aung San Suu Kyi. They are predicting that they will capture more than two-thirds of the parliamentary seats, which would be incredible. It would not only be a historic victory, but it would also give them significant clout to neutralize the power of Myanmar's military, because 25% of the seats in the parliament are automatically reserved for the soldiers, and that effectively has given them veto power. So if the NLD wants to change things in the constitution in the future, they will need that sort of landslide victory. No confirmation yet that that's what is going to happen, but the party officials here are confident that they are headed for that type of victory.
What is the mood? You're in Yangon, where some of the initial returns came from, and it also, I do believe, is a stronghold of the NLD. I take it there are some positive feelings being expressed there?
Yeah, we're right outside of the party headquarters. And people here are absolutely jubilant. There's loudspeakers playing party songs. There's people waving the red flags of the party. They're in red T-shirts. And they are confident that they have achieved this sort of significant historic victory that is going to propel their party into power.
Aung San Suu Kyi has at least been the international focal point of these elections. Has that been the case domestically as well? Is she the headline? Steve, you there?
Yes.
Okay, Aung San Suu Kyi has at least gotten the international headlines about this election. Is that the case domestically in Myanmar as well?
Well, I guess it depends on which newspaper you're reading and which television station you're tuned into. Of course, the government-controlled media has been playing up the wonderful things in their eyes that the USDP has done for the country in recent years. The parties which support the NLD and Aung San Suu Kyi have been basically filled with coverage of her. So it's been, as far as the media is concerned domestically, it's been quite a partisan approach to this election.
Well, the current leadership at least has vocally expressed the goal of a smooth transition, if indeed that is what is needed. Is there still skepticism over those statements, skepticism about a transition, if indeed that is to take place? Apparently, Steve is having a little trouble hearing me. Can you hear me, Steve? All right. Unfortunately, we have lost contact. Okay, Steve. That is Steve Herman, VOA Steve Herman, joining us live from Yangon and Myanmar. But recapping what he said is that it looks very good so far for Aung San Suu Kyi's party. Steve, are you with us again? All right. Unfortunately, we don't. Okay. We'll continue any later news that we have during this program. We will let you know. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is facing his toughest challenge yet. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they explore the possibility of major opposition leaders, former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi and Dr. Kizza Besigye, joining forces in next year's Ugandan poll. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
We continue on International Edition. A member of the investigation team has told Reuters that the team is 90% certain that the noise heard in the final second of a cockpit recording, that aboard the airplane that crashed in the Sinai Desert in Egypt, was an explosion caused by a bomb on that ill-fated Metrojet A321. And that happened on October 31st. The Islamic State affiliate in Egypt has claimed responsibility for the attack. Confirmation of that claim could be devastating to Egypt's tourism trade, already set back by recent political turmoil. The British Foreign Secretary, Philip Hammond, told the BBC Sunday the level of security at airports where the IS group is active will need to be revisited. Tim Clark is president of the Emirates Airlines.
If it is as a result of what it is alleged to be, I'm afraid it's another game changer for the industry. There have been a series of incidents involving civil aircraft over the last couple of years. Malaysian 17 was one when it was shot down over Ukraine. And this is another one. This means that the aviation industry, as well as the various countries involved in all of this, of which Europe, the Middle East, America will be getting into some kind of caucus forum to find out what can be done, what needs to be done, what the gap analysis is between what is being done and what needs to be done in the future. You know, this is a really, really bad thing to have happened. There's no question about that. But we have an ongoing review, audit of our security procedures, our safety procedures at all airfields. You know, we do live in a troubled part of the world, and there are places that we need to be a little bit more vigilant than perhaps others.
That is Tim Clark, the president of Emirates Airlines, speaking about the situation in Egypt, the airline industry and politics in general, and the situation in general, the dangerous situation in general worldwide. Let's move now to some entertainment news, shall we? Spectre, by acclaimed director Sam Mendes, follows secret agent James Bond on a personal journey seeking out a nemesis from his very own past. Since his previous assignment, Skyfall, where he lost his paternal home and his beloved boss M to the enemy, 007 is humbler and more introspective, but not any less tough as he embarks on what may be his most challenging quest yet, to upend the international crime cartel called Spectre. VOA's Penelope Pulo has more.
You had no authority. None. Mexico City. What were you doing there?
I was taking some overdue holiday.
Bond is going off the grid to search for the leader of a shadowy organization called Spectre. And it's truly a film for the big screen. After the international blockbuster Skyfall brought in a phenomenal $1.1 billion, nothing was spared for the $200 million production of Spectre.
Magnificent, isn't she? 0 to 60 in 3.2 seconds. A few little tricks up her sleeve.
A brand new Aston Martin, the DB10, built just for Spectre, races the streets of Rome in a sensational car chase. The car is one of many nostalgic references to older Bond films. Another homage is Mr. Hinks, the massive 2-meter-tall henchman after Bond. He's evocative of Jaws, the other human-killing machine, in 1977's The Spy Who Loved Me. All stunts and locations are real, from Austria to Mexico.
So when Daniel's on the rooftop, he's actually on a rooftop in Mexico City. When we have
helicopters flying over the square and down the streets. It's a real helicopter actually doing the stunts.
1,000 extras were used for the Dia de los Muertos festival scene, each and every one of them wearing a custom-made costume. A huge explosion rattles the Sahara Desert, where the mystery unfolds and Bond meets his nemesis, Oberhauser.
Information is all, is it not? For example, you must know by now that the 00 program is officially dead.
And it turns out Oberhauser killed it by sponsoring an intricate information agency, a behemoth of digital data collected by ever-present surveillance technology. His cronies have infiltrated the British government, replacing the 00 program with digital information technology. The story is a cautionary tale against pervasive surveillance and what happens when massive amounts of information get into the wrong hands. As in every other Bond film, romance is a necessary ingredient. Léa Seydoux plays brooding and aloof muddling Swan, Bond's main love interest. But his chemistry with a much older Donna Lucia, the widow of a mafioso, sizzles. Monica Bellucci, who plays the seductress, had an impact on Daniel Craig.
Mr.
Bond. James Bond.
She's Monica Bellucci. It's a no-brainer.
As sleek Spectre may be, it's these no-brainer scenes that make James Bond films box office hits. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
I guess Penelope loved the film, calling it a no-brainer. That's what makes it. My family and I went to see it yesterday. We were expecting a pure James Bond film. That's what we got. If you like James Bond, go see it. I'm Ira Melman. This is International Edition. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One thing is for certain, as our collective populations grow, so will our need for energy. And just as surely, as we ramp up energy production, wherever possible, we must turn to production that is clean and sustainable. Today's global population is about 7.3 billion people. Of these, millions are underserved, and about 1 billion have no access at all to electricity. So, given that the population will expand to some 9 billion by the year 2050, in order to accommodate the needs of another 3 billion people, our energy output will need to increase by at least 80%. Even in the short term, the numbers are staggering. As Undersecretary for Economic Growth, Energy, and the Environment, Catherine Novelli, said recently, in just the next 15 years, we can expect the world will add more than 5,500 gigawatts of electricity capacity. This is the equivalent of adding all the power generation that exists in the world today. At the same time, we need to also reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in the energy sector by 60% to 80% to address global climate change. One of the most promising technological advances in energy production is distributed energy systems, including off-grid solutions, such as power generators and solar panels, said Undersecretary Novelli. And because low-carbon technologies, such as solar panels, will be easier to acquire and cheaper to run than fossil fuel technologies, she said, the vast majority of those new connections will come from renewable energy sources. The United States has recently committed to providing access to off-grid clean energy products and services to more than 500 million people by 2020. This includes a $75 million loan guarantee from USAID's Power Africa program to scale up off-grid renewable investments in sub-Saharan Africa. $20 million in loans from the Overseas Private Investment Corporation for supporting residential solar in Kenya and Nigeria. And $46 million from the Millennial Challenge Corporation for off-grid electrification in Benin. When it comes to energy, our goal is to ensure access to affordable, reliable, sustainable, clean energy for all by 2030.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.